The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning and welcome into a new week of The Greg Hughes Show here in Highland Radio. I hope you did have a nice weekend, nice and relaxing if you were off and if you were working. I hope it wasn't too bad for you. It's great to have you with us anyway, and we'll keep you informed and entertained hopefully for the next 2 hours. Lots to come. We're going to be talking to Nicola Tallant soon. Obviously, Daniel Kinahan is back on Irish soil and was in court. We're going to have further reaction to the traffic woes in Letterkenny. Obviously, the Chamber releasing a statement at the weekend suggesting that, to paraphrase, no further works perhaps that would worsen the traffic situation should happen. There was a meeting on Saturday night. Not quite sure how that went, but anyway, we'll tease it all out. That and so much more besides. We want you involved in the conversation, of course, throughout, because this is your show. I'm just the presenter. 0860 25000. That's how you WhatsApp and text us. 0860 25000. You can give us a call on 07491 25000, and your emails come directly into our inbox at comments@highlandradio.com. If you're listening to the podcast of this show or the overnight repeat, then feel free to text or WhatsApp. We'll collect those and then carry them into the next live show. Great reaction, by the way, and thank you to the latest episode of the Greg Hughes podcast. Declan Meehan and his husband, Padraig McGuinness, were our guests. You probably know Declan from his front-facing role as a councillor. Padraig, very popular fan of GP, but also was an instrumental factor in securing the new hub that's ongoing now for Letterkenny University Hospital. And we have a great chat just about them, their relationship, I suppose, in terms of how they met, nothing too deep, and also to, you know, life in the public eye. What's it like? It's a great insight and an interesting podcast. You can check that out, by the way, on our website, or just search The Greg Hughes Podcast and listen to it wherever you get your podcasts. Or indeed, it's on YouTube if you want to watch it as well. We're just trying to improve all of the time, so hopefully you enjoy that. We've got another brilliant episode coming up for you on Friday as well, too. We release episodes every Friday. The papers this morning, the Derry People, Donegal News, the heartbroken sister of a schoolgirl murdered by serial killer Robert Howard is due in the Donegal town where she vanished. Now, I wasn't aware, and this is my ignorance, that it had been generally accepted that Howard was responsible. Very strong indications. Evidentially, I'm not sure what's there, but that is not me for a second questioning that. I wasn't sure that it had been settled on that he must have been the person responsible. Arlene Arkinson vanished without trace 32 years ago after a disco in Bundoran. Evil sex offender Robert Howard died 11 years ago without revealing the location of Arlene's remains. Howard was on bail for an alleged attack on a schoolgirl when he killed Arlene in August 1994. The county leashman was acquitted in 2005 of killing 15-year-old Arlene, but a 2021 inquest ruled that he killed her, which is the piece of information that I had forgotten. Kathleen Arkinson said, Bundoran is the last place where I know Arlene was happy, so I have to go up there. Tough. So much time. You know, it's crazy, isn't it, life? So much time has gone by, but still the pain and the hurt and the loss is still there. The Derry News on this, the 56th anniversary or 55th anniversary of the internment, the names of 14 internees out of the 342 people arrested and detained that day are particularly significant. And the story goes on. I don't want to omit any names and I don't have the time to read them all, but a detailed report there in the Derry News. Let's go to the Nationals, back on Irish soil for the first time in a decade. This is Daniel Kinahan, of course. It was Daniel Kinahan's first public appearance on Irish soil in over 10 years, this time surrounded by three unarmed detectives as his eyes scanned around Court 11 of the Criminal Courts of Justice, CCJ that is, located just a short distance from the Oliver Bond flat complex where he grew up. It was not the homecoming he had probably envisaged before April. Alleged crime boss Kinahan, 49, cut a dejected but polite figure as he addressed the three judges from the back of the Special Criminal Court. As he walked into the courtroom, his loose black tracksuit was anything but the type of apparel that might be associated with the alleged leader of a 1.5 billion drugs empire. More on that coming up shortly. On to the Irish Times, and this just, it's a by the by, it's not to antagonise, but I mean, obviously we talk an awful lot about, you know, there's an awful lot of people talk about people coming into this country, and often it is because they're coming in on work visas. That's notwithstanding that other people come in different ways, but there is a need. And one of those needs is for Bus Éireann, or Dublin Bus, should I say, because they literally can't fill drivers' positions from within Ireland. And it's the front of the Irish Times. Almost 100 drivers from South Africa have been hired by Dublin Bus in recent months as the company continues to look for new ways to fill vacant roles caused by staff turnover and expanding services. The company has previously recruited mechanics from Spain and the Philippines and says its workforce of 4,650, three-quarters of them drivers, include staff from around 90 different countries of origin. Chief People Officer Barbara Carroll said the company's first recruitment drive in South Africa had resulted in 93 hires. So they're having to literally go out to other countries in order to fill those roles. I'm not sure if you're following the political events, or it's not kind of political, but I suppose it is in Britain. New guidance has come down which focuses on toilets people can use effectively. And in a nutshell, what the guidance is saying is that women's toilets are for women who were born, or women, male toilets are for people who are born male. That was their birth sex, so to speak. So even if someone has transitioned from male to female, though many of you listening would think that's not possible, but they present as a male, they have to use the women's toilets, and vice versa, if they've transitioned to live their life as a woman, they would have to use the men's toilets. And there was a big outcry in relation to this, particularly by those who were affected by it. You hear mostly from the people who have transitioned, because for everyone else, life goes on. Well, J.K. Rowling, who is obviously a very well-known author behind the Harry Potter books and much more, well, she's very much in this conversation. And J.K. Rowling has offered to fund female patients and staff in the UK's NHS who take legal action over biological males being allowed into women-only spaces. The Harry Potter author acted after one British health trust said transgender women can continue to use female wards, toilets, showers and changing rooms for now. So just to be clear, transgender woman would have been born a man. The move by the Midlands Partnership University NHS Foundation Trust came despite the introduction of a new statutory code on single-sex spaces, which I was referencing. Ms. Rowling wrote on X, then the lawsuits will still keep coming should any female patient or member of staff require funding to fight this assault on their legal rights, apply, and she gives the website where you can apply. That refers to the UK, the J.K. Rowling Women's Fund, the private legal fund she established last year. So that conversation, that controversy, rumbles on. You might have heard over the weekend, or towards the end of last week, of the crash in South Donegal, just on that road between Bleak and Ballyshannon. Many of you would be familiar. A young man lost his life, his girlfriend seriously injured, and a fundraiser launched for a teenager recovering from serious injuries she suffered in a horrific crash that killed a boyfriend has received massive support. Lucy Robb, just 18, from Randallstown, County Antrim, was seriously injured in a crash on that road between... This is the collision that happened on the Pettigo Road. I beg your pardon. Lucy Road, 18, from Randallstown, County Antrim. Just to clarify, the crash on the Bleak to Ballyshannon Road, very sadly, a young girl was airlifted to hospital for treatment, and we wish her a full and speedy recovery. This is the crash that happened last week on the Pettigo Road, Lahey to Pettigo Road. Lucy Robb, 18, from County Antrim, was seriously injured in that crash near Pettigo last Sunday. That also claimed the life of her boyfriend, Ronan King, from Lurgan. She's being treated in the intensive care unit at the Mater Hospital in Dublin, where she is expected to remain for a considerable time as she recovers from serious life-changing injuries. Lucy, who will receive her A-level results this week, had hoped to study occupational therapy at Ulster University in Derry, a dream she worked tirelessly towards and was so excited to pursue. And again, you know, we often talk about fatalities on our roads, and quite rightly so, because, I mean, that's a life loss. But there is a young girl who is in hospital now with life-changing injuries. And it's very, very difficult for her and her family, I'm absolutely sure. And finally, Irish people are less likely to smoke than other Europeans, but the proportion of adults here who use tobacco products on a daily basis is increasing, believe it or not. A new report by the European Commission shows Ireland has the second lowest consumption rate of tobacco products in the EU, with just 11.7% of Irish people aged 16 and over smoking daily last year. However, the proportion of Irish people who are daily smokers has increased since 2022, when the rate was 9.2%, than the lowest tobacco consumption rate in the EU. I suspect this some of that is down to people, young people who've never smoked vaping. I'm sure if you're addicted to nicotine, why not have a cigarette if you're vaping all the time? And I would say that's contributing to it, because I would say we have a very high rate on a European stage of teen smokers, or teen vapers, I beg your pardon. And it is a gateway to smoking cigarettes. There's just no doubt about that. Or maybe there is a doubt about that. What do you think? I'm delighted to welcome on to the programme author, podcaster and investigations editor with the Sunday World newspaper, Nicola Tallant. Good morning, Nicola. Thank you so much for your time.
Good morning.
I suppose on the face, on the start off, I'm just wondering, did you always suspect this day would come? Because you and some of your colleagues have been tracking the activity of the Kinahans and others. You would have seen him become one of the biggest names in boxing. And I'm just wondering, over those years, did you think that perhaps maybe this day might not come?
Yeah, I was up and down about it, really, because when he first kind of moved over to Dubai, to the United Arab Emirates, and he got residential status, he was able to open companies and buy properties. It looked like he was very confident there. And we were always assured that the Gardaí here had a kind of a five-year plan to bring him back to Ireland to face courts. That turned into a seven-year plan and later a 10-year plan. So, you know, the ups and downs of it, certainly when he was at his height as a power broker of boxing, it looked like he had done the impossible and kind of transitioned into legitimacy. But always the Gardaí here were working away, along with their colleagues in the National Crime Agency in the UK, with their contemporaries in the Netherlands and Italy. And of course, the Americans weighed in 2022. So as soon as his face went on the wanted poster in the US Treasury and he was sanctioned and a bounty of $5 million put in his head, it did look like toast. But it did take another, you know what, 4 years since then. So anyway, finally got home last night.
Yeah, in a nutshell, which is not easy to do either, Nicola, can you remind people of what Daniel Kinahan is thought to be responsible for, what he's charged with?
He's charged with directing a criminal organisation. Now, that will be from Dubai. It's a wide-ranging charge, and it's likely to take in similar enough to his number two, Sean McGovern, was actually brought back last year from Dubai. He pleaded guilty to charges and got a 24-year sentence. The case will be similar because it centres around the murder of Noel Duckegg Kerwin at the end of 2016 and the attempted murder of James Mago Gately in April of 2017. The dates are similar in the charge for Daniel Kinahan, and we heard during the sentence hearing of McGovern how the police have decrypted PGP messages. These would be secretive encrypted phone networks that criminals were using for a long time that they believed to be bulletproof. But some years ago, the Dutch found the server for the PGP and Enetcom communication systems. They found it in Canada, brought it back to the Netherlands, where they decrypted millions of messages, and some of them involving the Kinahan network and these plots to kill and one murder are included in that. So we have heard a little bit of that from the McGovern trial, and we know that the state believe they know and can prove which handle Daniel Kinahan was operating on.
Is there any indication at this point, even though he wasn't able to organise legal representation for his appearance yesterday, if he will contest the charges or plead to them, or do we know what his strategy might be?
Well, he's permanently maintained that he's innocent of everything, that there was a conspiracy to kill him in Dublin at the Regency Hotel in 2016, that the government, the Irish Gardaí, the media and the Hutch Organised Crime Group worked together in order to attempt to have him assassinated. Crazy stuff, but that's what's in his head. He's released a book online which sort of tells that conspiracy tale story. There has been a rap song released, which is very Mexican cartel style, and a documentary film that was made. And he has maintained that position up until we heard last week. He was doing some interviews from jail with the Scottish podcaster James English. And again, he's talking about this, you know, trial by media, that the Gardaí, that, you know, the Irish state are out to get him, that he's been framed. He had no legal representation because there's a solicitor's strike down here, actually, but because he said that he didn't have time, that he believed a family member was going to look after that for him. And that last Friday, just Friday gone, that he was taken into kind of like, you know, a separate type of custody in Dubai where he was held in isolation and hadn't access to phones. Having said that, he did spend the week previous, knowing he was going to be extradited, on the phone with English conducting interviews. So he was told by the court, the judges, to investigate whether he wanted to get legal representation for his next appearance, which is in October.
I mean, some might feel that he's trying to perhaps, you know, court a jury pool or what have you, but that's irrelevant in this case.
Oh, it's a three-judge court. You know, there is no jury. He is slightly disconnected from reality, I would think, Daniel Kinnan. He has lived in a very bizarre, extreme world for the last 10 years and longer, really. It's not out of the question that he might try and represent himself. I imagine he'd be a difficult client for any firm of solicitors to take on because he doesn't take instruction. You know, he would be somebody who would believe he knows the law and, you know, will he fight? Will his defence be this conspiracy? It's very possible. I think it's highly unlikely he's going to plead on this. I think he will fight it. And he is facing, if convicted, up to life in prison.
And finally, his life is in prison for the foreseeable. How will he be handled in that? Because, of course, you know, everyone's familiar with the feud, which was one-sided, it has to be said, but also to the fact that, you know, he's a big name, big target on his back. You know, how will he be handled in that environment, I wonder, by the authorities?
I think the Irish have been very aware that the sort of the eyes of the world will be on this, and they're going to leave nothing to chance. I mean, he was brought to court last night in a very heavily armed and secured cavalcade. There was armed police all around the courtroom, and he was driven immediately back to Portlaoise prison where he was processed. He will be locked up for most of the day in Portlaoise as a remand prisoner, probably up to 20 hours. He'll eat alone. He'll exercise alone. This is somebody who hasn't been in prison before, albeit he's been in jail in Dubai since last April. I think conditions there aren't as good as maybe in Ireland, so he could be quite happy to be home. And he did look very sort of pasty and stressed yesterday when he appeared in court. But he was offered in the next appearance in October, which will really just be probably a mention, and to see if he has engaged a legal team. He was offered that he could do that over video link from Portlaoise prison. If he wishes, it'll be up to him. I think that would save a lot of expense and, you know, concern to not have to transport him every time he's in prison. But again, it's up to the accused to decide whether they want to appear themselves or not. So it remains to be seen. Firstly, if he engages a legal team, and secondly, you know, if he chooses to do the next appearance via video link.
Okay, fascinating stuff. Now, Nicola, you've a wealth of information out there, you know, for people to read, to listen, to view. Where's the best place if people want to catch up on all things relating to this case? They could go to see your work as well, of course, the Sunday World, but in terms of podcasts and what have you.
There's loads of stuff there, actually, on the Crime World podcast. We did a fairly lengthy podcast last night, and we'll be working on some more over the coming week. So there's plenty to listen to there. And otherwise, you know, online at crimeworld.com. And, you know, there's books. There's plenty of stuff if people are interested in Daniel Kinahan and his life and times.
For sure. Well, thank you very much indeed, Nicola. I appreciate your time. Nicola Tallant there, author and investigations editor with the Sunday World newspaper. Will he appear by video link, or perhaps he would love to cost the state money and the spectacle of appearing in court? He does seem to court the headlines. If he can't do it for the good stuff, I don't think it bothers him, as long as he's being covered one way or other. I think we reached a tipping point in the conversation about traffic in Letterkenny last week. We'd been talking about it, of course, extensively with frustrated motorists, those trying to get appointments. But often, really, the message we were getting from a business perspective is that, you know, Letterkenny's open for business. There are pinch points. There are times where things can be difficult. But generally speaking, you know, things are okay. And I can understand that. We did get a statement from Letterkenny Chamber over the weekend. We'd love to speak to someone from it. We're chasing them down in relation to that. But last week, towards the end of last week, we spoke to Sean Gallagher, Managing Director of Letterkenny Cabs. Now, as you can imagine, a cab company, they're on the ground. They know the story. They know what it's like 24/7. And Sean, you know, you were talking to us last week. There's no point raking over old ground, that you were, you know, even potentially considering legal action, that you were frustrated for your workers. You were concerned for your workers. There was a meeting on Saturday night. I believe you attended that. Here we are Monday morning. Where do you sit now in this whole conversation, Sean?
Good morning, Craig. I'm totally bemused, Craig, by the lack of action. That's not fair play to Mary T for organising a meeting. It's poorly attended. And I was hoping to see more transport operators at it, Craig. But I will say to the transport operators, come the end of September, your tune may change, because I don't believe you realise what's ahead. And businesses are sleepwalking, Craig, and I don't think they realise what is ahead in September. And I would be asking, why is Letterkenny Chamber not seeking a court injunction? Or have they? And if not, why not? With Councillor Devine also stating now that he doesn't know, realise what he voted for, there's possibly a legal action as there as well.
Mm.
To me now, Craig, the legal action is the only thing that's going
to... But to what end? What would
stop
you...
Stop it?
Yeah, but I mean, are you saying legal action to pause the works?
Even, Craig, if you continue with the works, it's going to be a disaster. If you stop the works, it's going to be a disaster. And Councillor Shelley was on last week about putting it back the way it was. Craig, it was a mess before. See, the only hope that I have is that, see the cycle lanes, Craig, that if they're turned in to lanes for cars, and I know that's probably not possible, that is the only way forward.
Yeah, so again, though, I mean, you're on the road. Are you saying that the only solution you see is pausing these works, you know, getting the kangaroo, or whatever they're called again, breaking up the footpaths, breaking up the cycle lanes and re-establishing them as car lanes? That's what you see as the solution?
But even at that, that's the only solution, is to put them as car lanes. Craig, I'm going to give you a scenario now of what's coming in September. I do a pickup at the hospital, Craig. It's going to take me 30 minutes to get out of the hospital car park. If I'm going to the mountaintop drop-in, it's going to take me 30 minutes from the hospital gate to the mountaintop. That's an hour. For a school transport operator that's lifting at St. Junan's College, going to the mountaintop, I would be allowing an hour and 15 minutes. That's not going to be sustainable. From a service point of view, firstly, and then from a financial point of view, and then you get into your stress and your fatigue and all that comes with that, then thirdly.
Mm-hmm.
My wife is back to work today. She works in Optum. My children go to the Model Crash. She works through her dinner break. he finish at 5 o'clock. He try and get to the model creation quarter to six.
Mm.
That even if she works through her dinner break come September, it's not going to be enough. So I'm looking. Am I possibly going to have to finish work now at 5 o'clock and do the creation run where the company is now losing out on me delivering a service? That's what's ahead of people.
In relation to the meeting on Saturday night, are you part of anything? You know what I mean? Like, did anything come from that?
No, there was a committee forum, Craig, but I was hoping for a committee filled with transport operators, to be honest. And that's not taking it away from retailers who are all going to suffer as well through a lack of business. I suppose my workplace is the road.
What do you
is going to be severely impacted?
From what you can gather, what do you believe the function of that committee would be? Because we already have a chamber, and we're going to speak to a rep from that chamber. Now we've got 37 councillors. We've got a representative chamber. What do you think the role of a committee formed on Saturday night might be?
Well, I know there is. They have put a thing under the council, and I have sent my own to the council yesterday. And there is a solicitor dealing with my own case that she's not onto that side of law, but she is going to try and get somebody that will take it on for me.
Mm. Okay. All right, listen, you can stay there if you want. I can come back to you because I want to go to Leonard Watson, who's owner of Watson's Menswear and member of Letterkenny Chamber. The statement released at the weekend, I suppose pointing out where the problems are, really, which we know, Leonard. But beyond that, what is the Chamber going to do? Or do you believe that maybe the situation this week and last week has been overstated? I don't want to put words in your mouth. What's your view?
Greg, I've been speaking to you for the last couple of years. We met with the planners probably well over 2 years ago, well before the work started. We pointed out serious issues about around the hospital, around St. Connell's, Little Angels, Errigal College. They were taking away the turnoff into St. Connell's. We told them that was a bad idea. They started the work and had to put it back in. Taking away the middle lane up there is madness. But what annoyed me at the time, Greg, they were telling me they had this plan already done, but they'd done a leaflet drop, but they had not spoke to Errigal College. They hadn't spoke to the ambulances. They hadn't spoke to the fire brigade. They didn't have numbers on how many was going into the hospital. They didn't know how many worked up there. They didn't know how many buses went into the Little Angels. But then they had a plan already done, like. And this is the madness of planning, like. The Tommy Keys roundabout, I remember at a meeting one day, Bernard Garrett pointed out, he'd know more about lorries than me. The turnaround to take you over by the industrial estate, he says, that's very narrow there. What about the big lorries going to Divertif? They hadn't spoke to Divertif at all. Now, this was long before the work was done, like. Mm. Long before the work was done. And they still never spoke to Divertif, like. So, and then even we pointed out they were taking away the... There's one lane now as you come round by Tommy Keys's. So if the traffic's stuck now going over by the Mount Errigal and you're trying to get there Melt Road, you can't go because there's only one lane there. It's just like whatever about cycle lanes, you're on flat land and out there, I have no issue. But it's the fact the town needs roads, like. You know, they're narrowing lanes everywhere around the town. Like, so I seen there yesterday on the railway road, there was a woman broke down. Now, the road was wide enough for everybody to go around her, like. But if that was on the back road or if it was on certain roads around Letterkenny, that woman's going to block the whole town, like.
Mm-hmm.
But they just don't. They weren't listening, Greg.
What do you want to see now, Leonard, as much as is possible realistically? You know, you've got a common sense head on you. What do you think should be done right now?
Greg, can I tell you something? See, at this stage now, I don't know. The buses should have been in over a year ago. Now, I'm not saying that would have been the answer to everything, but it would have helped a lot for, as you hear Sean about people getting from the college, the mountain top. That if you had a proper bus service going, with 8 buses going, that would take a lot of the local traffic.
But do you not have concerns though that you know there's no bus lanes? So we've completely redesigned the roads with no bus lanes. The roads have been narrowed. There's no drop curbs to let people on the buses. We are actually designing a town at the moment that really is not designed for a hop on hop off town bus service.
Greg, the way they, and again, we had huge issues that they have an idea that the bus will just pull in at the side of the road and the people will get on. And we brought in bus operators who says it's going to take maybe 4 or 5 minutes to get people on and off. They think it can be done in a minute and a half, which is nuts. But I'm just saying, like, Greg, this is people who are doing plans who do not, they never sat down and spoke to the buses until we actually told them, go speak to the buses, like. You know, these are the people who are doing it day in, day out. Sean knows the roads, you know, like, I was reared in the town, like, you know, there's people drawing up plans that I don't think know the town, like. And when you sit in a room with them and they say, no, this is going to be okay, and then they tell you they've spoke to nobody. They've spoke to nobody, like, but this is going to be okay, like. You know, you're chatting about future-proofing the town for the next 10, 15, 20 years. That road at the hospital, there, in the next couple of years, there'll be thousands more using that road, like, because of Errigal College going to 1,000 students, the new hospital. You know, it was absolute madness to take away that middle lane. And I do agree with Sean. See, come September, I do think that road is going to be a disaster. But
the problem with that, Kenny, is if one road is a disaster, the whole town's a disaster. You know, we saw...
Last Wednesday, now, and this is not an excuse, because I was just chatting to different people. Arena 7 was absolutely jammed up. The backstage was very busy. The old Duns, I think Brian Gallows, his first time he ever seen the car park, absolutely packed. I think it was a perfect storm. It was a wet day, and everybody decided to come into the town. The tourists and then local people, because the days after the traffic was moving.
The elephant in the room is do people just say, I'm not going there anymore, and that's it? Because I understand a busy town, but does that lead to, you know, traffic backed up the top of Lurgy Brack and out the dual carriageway? You know, a busy day. Surely that shouldn't tie up the town like that. And then the quiet days, is that not because people are going, I ain't going near the place?
But like, Greg, you know, I know Patrick Hart was on the last day and he's on about Sligo. Funny, my wife went through Sligo the next day and she got caught on that bypass for 45 minutes. Like. So I know, and that's not an excuse. There is going to be days that the town's going to jam up for whatever reason. But at the end of the day, Greg, I keep saying too, that the ATU went to 5,000 students. We didn't prepare for that, as in roadwise. We built a retail park. We built, you know, we've built all these places that are bringing in huge amounts of numbers, and we haven't put the road infrastructure in there.
Okay.
So we've passed planning for all these things, and we haven't backed it up with infrastructure.
All right. Sean, are you still there? Is there anything you want to add?
Greg, I know what we're chatting about, and people's wondering why the hospital roundabout is going to be a disaster to the Optum. If there's three or four cars within a minute making a manoeuvre without that middle lane, that's, and it takes maybe 10 to 15 seconds, that's a minute being lost for every minute the traffic's not moving. That is where the problem is.
Okay, both of you, thank you very much indeed. Leonard Watson there, member of the Chamber. Sean Gallagher, Managing Director of Letterkenny Cabs. Tony Forrester, CEO of Letterkenny Chamber. Good morning to you.
Morning, Greg.
Right, so what is the Chamber's position in relation to, I suppose, the current situation traffic-wise, but also to, as work continues and as we head to the back-to-school, darker, wetter, autumn stroke winter?
Well, I suppose the statement we put out the other day was really that we've always been aware of the traffic issues. We know they exist. Most people who use the town know that. We are not opposed to active travel. We have said every time we've written into the consultation active travel that we're not opposed to it, but we did always feel it was a bit of, excuse the pun, cart before the horse, and that the TNT would need to be progressed as quick as possible. It's a strategic route that we need, and we've always felt that need to be moved on far quicker. The other point, we've raised other points, I think Leonard covered them, around was consultation carried out, enough consultation carried out about how we move around these areas where there's active travel. And we've brought up our concerns at times, and I suppose that's all we can do. We can just bring up our concerns and hope that they get addressed.
Of course. Now, I don't mean this with any disrespect. The Chamber's doing what we're all doing, observing, seeing what's happening. But, I mean, your members have business rates. They've got bills to pay. Mm-hmm. They're hiring staff. They have to keep the lights on, right? As it stands now, is there a call for these works from the Chamber to be suspended? Or are you saying that we're disappointed but crack on?
Well, there's not. I'm not sure what you can actually do short term. I mean, what exactly, I don't know if taking them away, which I heard a comment about that the other day, you know, putting somebody in to take them away is going to make a huge kind of difference. But I'm not an expert, Greg, by any manner of means. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I would love to hear some people have some ideas about practical short-term measures that would help things. But I think, as Leonard said, there's days when the traffic flows perfectly well in Letterkenny, slowly but well. And then there's other days it locks up. And it's really hard to even predict when that happens. I will say that we have been completely disappointed that there's no Tyne bus service, and that the new Tyne bus service we were supposed to get in 2025 is nowhere near. And I think that's that will never solve the problem completely. But if we look at the success of Local Link with getting people into town centres, has been really good for students and everything. If we had a way of moving around Letterkenny, and a different way of moving around Letterkenny, maybe that would help.
In the press statement, the Chamber is engaged directly with several of the town's larger employers. What are they saying?
So there, traffic's like, so we talk about lots of things and then traffic will come up. And one of the suggestions was maybe let's have I know some of the councillors suggest as well, have a meeting with some of those to see if they have, maybe they have some solutions or some suggestions. There was talk about closing times and opening times and things like that. That would need to be discussed in a little bit more detail.
Yeah. So there's no direct call from the Chamber on the council to do anything as such or to do nothing as such in terms of suspend these works. It's just highlighting that the Chamber and its members recognise the problems. They recognise that the active travel scheme is important but should be post 10T. Like, you know, we are, best case scenario, 6 years away from the 10T being completed or usable. So what's going to happen between now and then for your members? I mean, are any of them concerned that they might go out of business or, you know?
Well, I suppose I'm not hearing them say I'm closing my business because, but people are concerned, and particularly town centre businesses that rely on people to come in and shop. I mean, we through our Shop LK initiative, we're trying to always promote local shopping. And yes, it is a concern. I'm sure people are going to criticise us for this. You know, what exactly can we do as a chamber to stop to?
I suppose what you do in that, in terms of the business lunches that you would have with senior politicians and what have you, mm-hmm. you would look to meet with mm-hmm. the CEO of the council and senior roads engineers mm-hmm. and say to them, this is unsustainable. What do you propose that we do mm-hmm. going forward? I suppose that's what people see the role as the chamber, yeah. Tony.
And that's what we do, Greg. You know. And we have meetings and we put forward, and Leonard has articulated that very well, we put forward our suggestions, we ask questions, and we then will ask our councillors to ask questions as well. You know, we try all of that. And then things, possibly sometimes the traffic's okay and it goes along for a while.
But just in relation to that, Tony, what I don't understand, and I've said this a couple of times, mm-hmm. and maybe mm-hmm. it's completely ridiculous, there's no articulation of when Letterkenny is busy or not busy. You know, there's no amber, you know, red, amber, green. I know red would sort of discourage people from coming in, but some sort of a nuanced system that gives people some indication of whether, or, you know, so that, in other words, green for go, Letterkenny most of the time, come on in. You know, but I don't think anyone actually knows.
Said,
when are the rush hours in Letterkenny if you're not from Letterkenny?
I don't know. We have said that at times, if you go out, I leave here in my office and I go somewhere in Letterkenny during the day. And I can generally get around Letterkenny really well in the car. Mm. I would sometimes prefer to walk, but I can sometimes have to take the car. And I can get up and down to Mountain Top and over to Mountain Road. But then obviously the problem has moved slightly. When the traffic lights went on Polestar, the problem seemed to move over to Mountain Road a little more. So we will hear that 4 o'clock is tight there. Mm. So It's a really hard thing to say, and I don't know. I've never been to a city where I've heard red, amber, green. I've never heard that.
No, but if you've driven on the M50, I'm sure, and you've seen the signs that will give you an indication of the distance, how long it'll take you to get to certain junctions and stuff. We're not reinventing the wheel. I'm on about literally, and the pushback is astonishing. Literally, a Facebook post indicating when it's free to move around Letterkenny. I'm not sort of, you know, it's real basic communication is all I'm talking of.
Fair.
But anyway, well above my pay scale, obviously.
It's a wee bit above mine. I have to be honest, there's times when we have talked about, you know, or we might be on the radio or something and say something, you know, it was really, you know, easy to get around Letterkenny today. And then an accident happens or something goes wrong and it locks, you know, it locks up. And that's back to the problem which we've had for 20 years that we haven't built enough roads. And we aren't well, it's not a well-planned town, and that's not a secret to anybody. I suppose our thing is that we are the urban centre. You have to come, if you want to go to the hospital, you have to come here, you know. And that's I suppose, a good thing in the long run because it creates employment. But that also becomes its own worst enemy because you have to come. For certain things, there's certain things people have to come to Letterkenny for.
I know, but you don't narrow the roads, do you? You don't widen the roads for footpaths and cycle paths that no one's going to use. Do you put extra lights up? You talked about the Remelton Road. There's, you know, two junctions now that are going to be lit there. You know, we don't know the consequences, but I suppose it's wait and see. Is that the stance of yourself and the chamber?
Well, they would what we've been told about those two sets of lights is that they're two new junctions, and they will be talking to each other. That sounds stupid. You know, they're intelligent lighting systems, want for better perspective. Now, there's going to be pain before there's gain with that. But the only thing, and I'm no expert, but I do know that when I go to Polestar, I can get around Polestar now, where before it was tough. But I know if there's green light, I can get through. And I suppose lights make a wee bit more surety of getting through. But I think there'll be a bit of pain before that. But I'm not an expert either.
Okay. Thanks very much. Appreciate your time, Tony.
No problem.
Okay, that's Tony Forrester there, CEO of the Letterkenny Chamber. Lots of you texting in relation to this. The Gardaí should man the pole star. The only one thing I'd say is Gardaí aren't traffic wardens, and they are incredibly, incredibly busy, and they aren't. It's not their job to do traffic management or to, you know, we need them out doing what they need to be doing, not doing lollipop man and women roles because other people can't design roads. But anyway, sorry, that's no contradiction to you. It's just a... the Gardaí should man the pole star at times as they won't give way to the Derry Road. If the Harry Blaney had put his bridge in Letterkenny, that would have been the answer. We were 1 hour sitting in traffic going to the oncology. Thanks, Kathleen and Bert. But the people of those two peninsulas needed to be connected. It's not either or. Where was the political will, or where has the political will been to actually address the issues in Letterkenny rather than looking to lift a bridge from Fannad? The cycle lanes have only added more chaos to the long-time traffic problems in Letterkenny, says the listener. Half of that traffic is passing through the town. A bypass is the only solution, of course. But, you know, at some point people are going to have a here-and-now conversation rather than an observation conversation. You know, I mean, active travel, I think those works will be fantastic when you take the traffic out of Letterkenny that don't want to be there. But that is years away. What if we have an economic crash? What if that is pushed back to 2040? I know that's sort of what ifs, but I mean, this is medium potentially to long term. Did the so-called councillors, well, they are councillors, did the councillors and planners ever drive lorries around Letterkenny? Such a disaster on truck operators trying to get around or even keeping drivers as they are fed up sitting in congestion, adding 2 hours onto their working day. Take away the silly-looking poles and roundabouts and stop blocking roundabouts, says that listener there. Thank you for your time. Greg, wait until the new hospital opens and the houses at Windy Hall are occupied. Letterkenny is a disaster. Why those cycle lanes were ever allowed? As Leonard said, these boys sitting around a table with ideas. Why fix something that was working fine? Wait until today, 3 weeks, when all the schools are back, and it's actually 2 weeks in some cases. Another, why can't these planners go around the town and see what needs to be done instead of just sitting drawing up plans that are not fit for purpose? That's another listener's comment there. And on it comes, keep them coming in to us. I mean, you know, we hold a mirror up to what people are out there talking about, and everybody in this county at some point or other has to either travel to or through Letterkenny. So it is a big story. There's just no doubt about that, and it's vexing a lot of people. Right, OK. So I suppose last big final, inter-county final, I think yesterday, wasn't it? The Camogie. So it's all eyes on the club scene now, Brendan.
Yes, that's it. The club championship's back. Great to see it. People still maybe not totally happy with the format in terms of getting that championship feel. You know, yeah. They've rejigged things, particularly in all Ireland states, to maybe bring big games in and games that matter. You kind of have a lack of maybe jeopardy just starting off. But listen, still a couple of very interesting games. And I suppose myself and Porrick probably covered one of the better games, which was Glenswellyn Thurman, that had that bit of, I suppose, derby feel. Yeah, listen, it was a great game. I suppose when clubs are as close as that, Rick, and there's people were finding it hard to pick a winner, it was always going to be a game that was going to go down the wire, and that's what it did. But listen, great start for them, and Darren McGinley's his first year in there managing the team there. He's built a good management team behind him, and of course Michael Murphy started. He didn't play at all last year, just with injuries and that. So listen, he of course had a big say on proceedings.
Top quality player still, isn't he? So you're going to be looking over all the big weekend games. Porrick Hilferty's in studio with you. Dr. Maguire winner as manager, Gary McDade as well. So that's not a bad little panel. Declan Boner, the current Fermanagh boss. Of course, O's Donegal nothing, right?
Yes.
What's the focus of the chat with Declan?
Do you know what, Dick? I was just looking back. Declan actually gave me my debut way back in 1997. Long time ago now, gee. Fresh face then. But I was looking at his time in football. You know, obviously he's one of our heroes from 1992. But between managing club teams here, underage county teams, Donegal twice, then I think he was looking to step away from it. And he was asked to come back into Erin Gales, who hadn't won a championship, senior championship, and Declan came in back to back. And then he ends up coaching Fermanagh. And I think at a time that he was maybe looking to step away a bit from football, and then he's right back into county management and the cut and thrust of it. So I was thinking from his time of playing, he's just never stopped. I mean, I don't know anybody that's put in the time that he has in GAA.
At the level he has.
It's just unbelievable. And so much success right across from him. And so listen, always great to catch up with him and just to talk to him about the problem is
you would need 3 hours for that convo. Where are you going to start? Where are you going to start with that? Start with your debut. What did he see in you? What was that like? Do you remember that day?
Do you know what? We actually played, would you believe, it was funny, we played Mayo down in a wee place called Ball, and they were just getting ready for the All-Ireland final. So, listen, there was a real buzz about it. You know, so different now. Can you imagine Mayo playing a friendly before an All-Ireland in a wee small club? Sure, it's gone crazy when you think about the changes in it. So, yeah, listen, it was interesting.
What did you score in your W?
I got a couple of points. I also got a kidney searcher from one of the cornerbacks, which, because it was a friendly, I wasn't expecting. I was dancing about, all buzz.
I can imagine you look like a right little smart ass.
I probably deserve it, yeah. But honestly, because it was a friendly and they're getting ready for the final, I never thought this could be on the table. Next thing, I got the shot. Welcome to County Footballs.
There was some speculation Seamus Coleman was going to start or play for Killybegs yesterday, which was kind of exciting. But what happened in the end?
Do you know what, Greg? It's funny the way
he's been training with them,
we love a good rumour story, yeah, don't we? And he has done this quite a lot, though, right? People think that this is a one-off. When he has come home, even when he was obviously playing with Everton, that he has trained with Killybegs and that, because he just loves them. He loves the Gaelic, he loves the Killybegs. So he's done this a lot, but for some reason this time the story grew that he could play. Now, there are rumours now falling under this week as well. Listen.
But he's no longer at jeopardy of injuring. He's finished with Everton, isn't he?
Yeah,
he's a player.
Yeah.
And
I don't know what's next for him. The thing about
sport, you know, like you know yourself, when you stop playing. And I've spoken to former players previously. It's not easy to step away from that training squad stroke team play. Yeah. It can be tough. Like,
there's no doubt he's going to do some coaching. He's already done that. He's been part of, you know, he's been in the round. You can see the Everton backroom team there and that. But I think, Greg, I mean, even from a Killy Beggs perspective, I mean, this isn't a charity football match. This is senior football. Yep, yep. Like, it's not to say, oh, we'll throw on him, see how he gets on.
Kind of would.
I know it. And from our perspective, everybody
Dannings
would love to see it.
Would
we not love to see that? I mean, it'd be amazing to see it. Amazing to see play. Listen, he was a brilliant Gaelic footballer before he left. But listen, I think it's
know
a stretch.
What you mean. Yeah. I know.
But listen, if he was training and he was doing okay, there's nothing.
Go on, put him on for the
stick
first
time. Stick him on, right.
Brilliant stuff. Right, so Pádraig Hilferty, Gary McDade and Brendan looking back over the club championship and a legend. And I hope, well, he does. He has the legend status, Declan, doesn't he?
He does.
He does.
Listen.
I mean, that's never going to be lost because, as I say, he's given so much to this county. The amount of players that in your era and even in the current era maybe, or perhaps a generation back, that he brought through at the underage level. Mm. Like, I mean, how he can work with young players, I would suggest is second to none.
And Greg, you know, it's funny, if you look at, say, people from, say that 92 team, there's only so many of them that did anything after that in terms of, say, doing some coaching or getting involved in teams. It's almost like Declan has made up for so many of them because he's got involved in so many teams across Donegal and now you say Andy Fermanagh. But yeah, it's not for everybody, but it just depends on the person and how they like to, as you said, no more than Seamus Coleman. Some people can step away and then that's it. And they're very, I think, withdrawn from football. You mightn't even see them at games or nothing. Then you have someone like Declan that's just part and parcel of his life.
Pumping through his veins. Yeah. I also think he listens to this show as well too. So
He might be on the way.
I
hope
all
I was
right.
kind to him. Thanks for giving me my debut, boss man.
The deal debate tonight from 7 p.m. You can also podcast it and listen to it whenever you like, but you can listen and watch it tonight. Brendan, thanks so much for calling in. Brendan's away to start putting that show together now. You know, we don't just turn up. There's planning and everything. That's 7 p.m. on the issue of traffic. Anyone going into Letterkenny from Gweedore or coming up the mountain shop should bypass Letterkenny and shop in Derry. You should buy your petrol in the border too. I go do my shop in Derry every Tuesday. Everything's cheaper. You'll come back with loads of shopping, if not more bang for your buck, and you'll still have money left over. But you have to, like, I don't mean it funny. I understand where you're coming from, but you know these local businesses are paying the rates, which keeps the lights on here in Donegal. These local businesses are employing our younger people as well, and have done. My two eldest boys from the day they left school have been employed in local businesses. And I'll be honest with you, if I were running a charity event, I'm not going to Derry to say, will you sponsor this, that or that. I'm going to the local businesses as well. And it's not like they're, you know, ripping people off either. I take your point, but we just really need to support local too. Where are your councillors this morning? Didn't hear of many there on Saturday night. Look, the bottom line is the Saturday night thing. I wasn't there. I don't know what went on it. But to say it's not, it would be impossible for it not to be political because you have someone who is Aintu in Mary T. Sweeney organising it. You know, and I'm not sure. So you invite other politicians, you know, Fianna Fáil, 100% Redress Independence, Fine Gael, you ask them to be there. But if there was, and I don't know, but if there was any criticism of any other party from the stage, right, then that doesn't become a useful meeting any longer. It becomes, because it's political. Okay, so the only way, and maybe it was like that, please, if you were at it, let me know. The only way a meeting like that works, if it's truly a grassroots, let's work together and see what difference we can make. The only way that works, if it is completely apolitical. And there is no criticism of Fianna Fáil, and then Fianna Fáil feel they have to defend themselves and say, well, look, at we didn't vote for these plans, or, you know, you don't say, well, 100% Redress voted for them, and then they might say, oh, well, we didn't know what we were voting for, or whatever it might be. Yeah, all of those scenarios. If that conversation is happening at a meeting like that, what you're doing there is you're just venting, and it's a political meeting. And the politicians, if they turn up, they're damned. And if they don't turn up, they're damned. That's the bottom line. And it's always been the case, even if you're organising a protest about the hospital or education or what have you. If it's headed up by a political person or political party, even if you say it's apolitical, by default, it's not. And that's just that's just my assessment of it, who's been doing this crack for a long, long time. As I say, I wasn't there. But if it became political and finger pointing at certain parties. That's not it. You host a meeting like that and you say, right, the politics are at the front door. This is about what are we going to do solution-wise. Maybe it was like that. There is an English bank holiday at the end of this month. Let's see how Letterkenny looks the Tuesday afterwards. Another Letterkenny needs two bridges. Perhaps we should have kept the Blaneys in power. They seem to be the only people capable of delivering a bridge. Who are these planners? Do they not have a face? Leonard said they met with the planners. Who are they? Can they not be approached and brought onto the radio to explain their reasoning? The reasoning is that Letterkenny, what's it going to look like in 15 years? You're going to have a mix of vehicles. You're going to have a mix of cyclists, pedestrian traffic. At that point, you will have a bypass that will be going around the town. That's what the vision is. I think the problem is that we're doing the internal town stuff that you would be waiting to do after the 10T. And it was put to the councillors and they said, look, the money's here now, there's the plans, do we go ahead? The councillors from across the county says, yes, let's do that. There was some opposition, but they said, let's do that. And here we are. So really, the planners presented the plans. The plans will work really well, I suspect, when the bridge and all that is built. At the moment, not so. Okay, let's take a quick break. It is that time of the year again where students are returning to the ATU in Letterkenny or heading up here for the first time. And that, of course, creates pressure on accommodation. Joseph Sweeney's the Students' Union Deputy President at the ATU. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for joining us. Now, there is this is about, of course, putting a call out there for... students, but I mean, there's great opportunities potentially for homeowners. Are we focusing in Galway, or is it right across all the ATU campuses today, Joseph?
It's across all of ATU. We have the nine campuses. I'm obviously coming from a Donegal perspective, but of course, across ATU, we do have that call out across Galway, Sligo, and Donegal for homeowners and landlords to offer their rooms to students. It's an overall perspective.
And maybe there are empty nesters listening to us, and we'll focus on Donegal. Maybe there are empty nesters listening to us, or people with a spare room. And there is, a considerable amount of money. You can earn 14 grand a year tax-free, subject to certain conditions from revenue. So as I say, this is about getting students a roof over their head, but it can be really advantageous for the homeowner.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, it's definitely beneficial for both parties. We would have been in contact with a number of landlords over certainly my last year in the Students' Union, not just from the case of renting a room to a student, obviously, with the financial benefit, but obviously as well, if you're a parent and your own son or daughter has gone away to university in Maynooth or Cork or wherever it may be, and, that room is empty in the house, and, you just want to, provide some company, or, we've been in contact with many landlords who just recognize the struggle, I suppose, that students are going through nowadays in terms of the cost of living and how expensive it is and how difficult it is to find accommodation. So, for multiple different reasons, it's great, and the community has shown out and got involved.
And for reassurance purposes, there's a structure to this, right? It's not just blind renting out your room. There is support there for homeowners, those with spare rooms.
Yeah, absolutely. So, in the Students' Union, we provide essentially an accommodation list. So we would reach out to landlords through, the mail drop that would have been, busy last week and through social media and different things like that. We provide a list, and essentially we've moved over to a new service now for accommodation. So it's a site called StudentPad. So essentially you're able to provide, whatever element of information that you want on that. It allows for, photos of the property, things like that. That you can, you can be specific in what you want to advertise, and you can also look for specific types of students if you so wish, whether it's a female only, male only, whatever the case may be. And then essentially, it's from the students then that go on and find that list. And, the landlords do have an element of control, I suppose, in terms of the students contact them and then it's just working out the best fit for them.
Yeah, for sure. And also, too, I suppose, logically, if you're renting out a room, the person who's staying in that room, you know, they're going to need access to you know, shower, toilet facilities, maybe the kitchen as well.
Yeah.
That could be worked out, but in reality, you can't expect them to only use the room, can you?
Yeah. No, I mean, look, it'll depend on each particular type of accommodation.
Right, okay,
but yeah, I suppose that, you know, access to some element of shared bathroom, shared kitchen is always absolutely, you know, mostly ideal. So it is, you know, you're sharing a home with a student. It's, you know, it's not just a case of plop them up in the room and see them 12
months
later.
Well, for some, that can be company too, you know, as well. And there are lots of protections in there if it doesn't work out. What do we know in terms of the demand at this point? I never went to third level, so I don't really know the timings of it, right? But I presume courses have been offered now and people are now currently actively seeking accommodation. Is that correct?
Yeah, I suppose it would have built up over time, so we would have had an initial spike in terms of, you know, students and, you know, mostly parents and families who would come to us in kind of March, April time saying, you know, my son or daughter is looking to go to college here, you know, what about accommodation? But certainly over the month of August now, as the campaign has begun and as students receive their CEO offers, you know, there will be definitely a spike. There has been a spike in terms of looking for accommodation. I suppose on a numbers game, you know, with the increasing amount of people that are just going to third level studies, you know, there is an increasing demand. And so that search is on now. But, you know, I suppose from a student union perspective, we just try to offer that support for those who are searching now and for those who want that direct support in terms of finding accommodation, the best fit. Just to be able to be there for them.
I'm not sure if you said something different to this, but this is from a texter. If you register on the A2U student accommodation site, you cannot at that point choose what kind of person you want. Female, male, mature. I deregistered when I couldn't choose. But you suggested, did you, that you do have some say who comes into your home? It's not like you have to take that person, Sinead.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, we provide a contact list, essentially. So it's, you know, it's any kind of advertising platform. So you put your property up, you provide your photos, you provide the information of the property. And there is more information tab in terms of, you know, what students would you like to even be able to search for?
Prefer female, prefer mature, it's your home. Like,
absolutely. Look, the decision is down to the landlord at the end of the day. It's not just a case of, you know.
Because it doesn't matter, the way I would view it, it's, you know, you want to meet the person. Like, you know, you could meet a 20-year-old who has a 70-year-old's head on their shoulders, or you could meet a 38-year-old who thinks they're, you know, just turned a teenager.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I would have stayed registered, leave my options open, and meet your potential housemate personally,
and
get that 14k into the bank.
Yeah,
or whatever it is, I don't know.
Whatever it works out as. Yeah, I suppose from that perspective as well. Look, like we do acknowledge from, and you know, students and analysts do acknowledge that, you know, you might have looked for different types of students. So, for example, if you're, you know, if you're young, you want to be out partying, that, you know, it may suit more some different types of accommodation to others, for example.
Maybe even an ex or something, like, I guess. Yeah, right. But listen, unless you're in the scheme, you're not in play. How do people register anyway? There's a website, isn't there?
Yeah, so as from this year, we've moved over to a site called StudentPad, so the links are all, I suppose, on the advertising material. You can reach out to suwelfare.donegal@atu.ie. That's the email address if you just want that direct support. But essentially, it's our new accommodation platform. So, you know, you go to the ATU accommodation site, you go through then to the Donegal subsite, and then from there, it's a big registration form. Probably takes about 5 minutes to complete on all. If you want to provide photos as well, you can. And then from that point, you choose when you want your advert to run. You actually specify when the platform is available from. You know, if this works on it, for example, and you want to wait 2 weeks, you can. So you can actually specify that exact information, and then from that point then students can then contact you, and that's when the process
and it's your choice
started.
It's completely your choice. So I mean, I understand, but sometimes people have things negative to say, but they're not involved in it. It's your choice. If you have a spare room, if you want a bit of company, if it suits you, if you want to you know, if you want to supplement your income, you know, there's the option, but you don't have to either. Okay. StudentPad.ie or .com?
I believe it's .com. The ATU accommodation site will be
atu.ie/accommodation. It'll be daisy chained from there. Anything you want to add, Joseph, or if we covered everything there?
No, I suppose just to appeal, I suppose, to landlords to just consider the option in terms of supporting the campaign. You know, like students, we're finding it incredibly difficult at the moment with the cost of living and with everything else. And, you know, there's so many, you know, just success stories and goodwill that does come out of it in terms of, you know, you do create that relationship with the student as well. And you know, as we've said multiple times, you know, at the end of the day, it is the landlord's choice in terms of how they want to rent out the property. You know, you can be specific in terms of 5-day or 7-day accommodation. So, I would just encourage us to try and, you know, at least, you know, have a look at the campaign, see if you want to get involved with it. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's you're the master of your own direction, I suppose.
ATU.ie/accommodation. Joseph Swinney, Student Union Deputy President at ATU Donegal. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
The Road Safety Authority is the body charged with promoting road safety on our roads. They have a huge, huge budget, €18 million annually. In fact, I think they've spent close on €44 million on marketing advertisement in the last 6 years. Big, big figures. But what has been the outcome from that? Let's say hello to Councillor Marie Casserly, who is passionate about this this part of our society. Good morning, Marie.
Good morning.
Right. So there's no doubt road safety awareness is important, but you would have to question whether we're getting value for money in spending, you know, €44 million in 6 years. And the problems on our roads, the deaths are worsening.
Yes, and I'd just like to say thank you for covering this really important issue again. I've been, as you're aware, I've been highlighting this for a long time now, just, you know, to make the issue of road safety, you know, a national campaign that it's a safety issue, that it's an emergency at this stage. We see every single weekend the amount of people who are getting, who are seriously injured and getting killed in our roads, and it should be treated as a national emergency. But I don't see... I don't see the government really taking that on board properly. I don't see any changes in the last few months, and every week the numbers are going up instead of down. So I do agree that, you know, there is a place for road safety awareness campaigns, and with my teacher's hat on, I've actually facilitated road safety workshops in our school, and I'm going to do it again next year with our transition year students, and it is a very good initiative. But my point is that €44 million, as you said, has been spent already on advertising and public relations with the Road Safety Authority over the past 5.5 years, and they're going to put in another €18 million for awareness, education, promotional activities annually. And at the same time, the roads police in numbers are 400 members lower than they were in 2019. So what I wanted to ask the RSA and the department and is, like, we have to get the balance right. So say, for example, I've broken it down in that that €18 million could equate to about 225 additional roads policing Gardaí. And that level of funding could strengthen the roads policing, and that could be through additional personnel, patrol vehicles, enforcement technology, which I keep talking about is so important, and it's worked in other countries. Over 5 years, that's about €90 million in enforcement capability. So, you know, and I'm not suggesting that the RSA, all that money should be simply transferred to the Garda Síochána.
But I understand what you're saying. But at the same time, I do think the RSA, there has to be some measure of what's being achieved with that spend. You may or may not be aware, but my understanding is that my understanding is that they were due to do a major campaign on road safety as it relates to motorbikes. And Glenn Hansard, the Irish musician, passed away in a motorbike collision. Mm-hmm. And my understanding is that at least some of that advertising was pulled because they didn't want to be insensitive. Now, I understand that, but we've also seen, tragically, motorbike crashes since that. That is one decision in and of itself, I think, would require a great deal of scrutiny. Because I don't mean this funny, I don't want to be insensitive, but I don't think if you're waiting for the right time to do things in this country as it relates to road safety, you'll never do it. I think pulling certain ads because of sensitivities and all is woke nonsense, to be honest with you. I don't know what you think about that, but if that's how that association is working, I would have great concerns about how it's fit, its purpose.
Yes, and you've got it in a nutshell. Actually, you summed it up really, really well. But people know, drivers know the rules of the road. You know that even now they're a lot more difficult. The theory test is so much more difficult than when we were sitting. Well, I don't know about you, but when I was sitting my driver's test, like it's actually very, very. You know, where, you know, I go through it in the schools and with my own children, and it's actually really, really, it's really difficult test, and it's really technical, and they study really hard for it. So younger drivers now are very much more aware of, you know, the percentages and the numbers and the figures, much more aware than we would be. So it's not like they know all that already, because they have to pass that in order to move on to the next stage of their, you know, the whole process of getting a driving license. So my point is that, and this isn't like, you know, about a nanny state catching people out. This is about saving people's lives on the roads. And what I see is that the money that they're spending at the moment, if it was working fully, the numbers would be going down. Whereas the fatalities are going up. They're talking about putting more money into advertising, yet there's less money in roads policing. There's no development, or it's so slow to roll out any kind of enforcement technology, any kind of like fixed cameras and red light cameras that are supposed to be introduced 2 years ago. Red light camera technology, like if that investment was put into technology, it would make everybody's lives easier, and the guards cannot be in. And most of the accidents happen on rural roads and secondary roads. You cannot have guards on every single road in the country at every hour of the day and night. But what you can do is support the guards in the roads policing. And that is, and as I said before when I spoke with you, it is proven in other countries and in other cities around the world that when they invest in technology, that the numbers of fatalities go down. So I don't know what's so difficult to understand about that. That the money is, you know, the money is there. They're not. It's not a lack of resources.
Resources. I think that you very legitimately have equated what 18 million would buy you in terms of guards. But the truth is, and I'm really I hate state government overreach. I've said it before. But we've got one static speed camera in this county. I'm speaking to you from Donegal, of course. We have no average speed cameras. You know, I could pick, very easily, I could pick a handful of roads that if you had an average speed camera at the beginning and end of it, would address a lot of what we're talking about here. And also, too, the scrutiny of the RSA spend. I would love to know how much they spent on producing and putting road safety adverts on RTE and Virgin Media. Because if the truth be told, the people most likely to be involved in serious collisions or fatal crashes do not watch scheduled TV anymore at all. So that is breaking wind into a hurricane as far as I'm concerned. So I would like to know what's the nuance of their spend on advertising. Where's that money going? There's no point having a 40 or 50-year-old person trying to convince the 17, 18, 19-year-old. They need peer influence. Do you know, the basic stuff that I don't think the Road Safety Authority is doing with the state's money, with our money, with taxpayers' money.
Yeah, and again, you have peer influence and you have influencers on social media and you have TikTok and you have Instagram, and all that is happening already, because I see it, and I see the RSA ads. But it's still not working. I am convinced, and I said it's not to catch people out, it's to save lives. The only way that you are going to make people safe, drive safer on the road, is to know that there's a consequence, that if you drive under the influence of drink or drugs, if you drive too fast, the chances are that you are going to get caught, you are going to change your behaviour. And that's And we can plead and we can beg and we can tell people to slow down. We can have advertisements on the radio that you get immune to once you see them a few times, you switch them off, you stop looking. We can do all that, but unless you or I know that you're going to get caught, or there's a huge chance that you're going to get caught if you go out and drink driving at the weekends or speeding, that is, unfortunately, that is where we've gone to at this stage, where you know that if your insurance is going to go up, if you have penalty points, if you're going to be up in front of a judge, that's what's going to modify and change behaviour. And I'm convinced of it at this stage. And the technology is there. It's proven that it works. Why can we not have that technology? I said we need a national, and I have a motion down for the county council meeting in September, to call for a national task force. Again, not another talking shop where they spend months sitting around talking about how awful things are, but have the expertise. Like, as far as I'm aware, they don't even have a road safety engineer sitting on the board of the RSA. And again, that was supposed to be restructured a couple of years ago, and the Minister of Transport decided, no, we won't restructure it. So why? I don't understand why you can look at something, and if this was even, you know, if it was in a company, if it was in a community group, if it was on a football team, if something isn't working properly, then you look and say, what are the problems here and how can we change it? And what works well in other counties for football or whatever it is? It's not that difficult, but I really genuinely think that the political will isn't there, because it makes, you know, because drivers will be annoyed.
I think this was recognised and there was talk of splitting the RSA. Because clearly they're two different mandates, I think, in terms of, you know, the work in keeping, you know, cars safe and safe for the road, etc. And then this education side of stuff. For some reason, that was scrapped. Have you any insight into that?
What the department did say was that it would take two years to restructure the RSA, and that was too long of a time.
Okay.
So they didn't.
Right, yeah.
So that's why it said, oh, it'll take too long. But so we're still here 2 years later, a year and a half later, and there, again, more people are being killed on the road. Mm. And it's something, I really do think that every single politician, it doesn't matter, party, independent, I think every single TD, and every single community, school groups, parents, teachers, and I said it before, unless we all start taking this seriously, and people say, well, it's, you know, it doesn't affect me because I haven't lost, you know, a family member. Do we have to wait until we lose a family member before we start sitting up and taking this seriously? I think it should be on the agenda of every single politician, every single TD in the country, to make this, to put this on the agenda, to say this is affecting communities throughout the country. There is nothing more urgent at this stage. I am 100% convinced that this is the most urgent issue that's in our societies at the moment. That, of course, involves drug use as well.
Yeah,
but that's all linked in as well to the...
The thing is, I recognise the issue of scramblers. But to be honest with you, you know, scramblers up here, it's not a particular problem I've come across. But it's astonishing how quickly things moved on scramblers. And it's also astonishingly quickly how things moved on scooters. So then when someone comes to me and says, when someone comes to me and then says, oh, well, 2 years, we'll not go ahead with those plans, or there's nothing we can do with this, no plan. And I understand it was a high profile case with the scramblers and a beautiful young life taken far too soon.
Mm-hmm.
But what I don't understand is why those two issues. There was one press release from medics that said, look, six young people are in the children's hospital with brain trauma. And then within 2 to 3 weeks, the whole e-scooter thing. So, and considering the wider picture, cancer, they are incredibly important, but are actually really quite small in the wider scale of things, and especially on a countrywide basis. So when we want to, or when they want to,
absolutely,
move very quickly, the pace is actually sometimes too quick, because we probably didn't really fully tease out the e-scooter situation. So when there is a will, there is a way, and it happens very, very quickly.
Yeah, again, you've summed up exactly what I've been talking about for the last few months about. I just think that the e-scooters... And I don't, again, want to sound insensitive, you know, because that's not what I'm talking about. But it seems like an easy win in that, like, oh, we'll change the law and it's an easy target. But if you enforce the law that's there already, you don't need to introduce new laws. The law was there that under-16s cannot use e-scooters and they cannot drive over 25 kilometres an hour. Enforce that law instead of introducing new laws that are probably unenforceable or very difficult to enforce as well. And just in relation to that, and the six children, a few weeks ago, the six children were in intensive care with head injuries from e-scooter accidents. But there are hundreds of children and hundreds of people, adults, in hospital in the Dunleer, in the centre of the rehabilitation centre,
in brain acquired injuries. Can I just leave you
They're in hospital for so long, and there's no mention, so it shouldn't be just targeted at one kind of an easy, you know, an easy demographic of society. It should be focusing on enforcement across the board, not just targeting on e-scooter users.
I just want to say,
people are legitimately using e-scooters.
I want to leave it on this, and it's just by pure coincidence, and I assure you this is a pure coincidence. I talked to you about the deferred motorcycling safety campaign. They've just launched it right now, and there's been at least one fatality on a motorcycle since. I'm not saying it would have stopped that, don't get me wrong. And it's RSA urges drivers to look right, look left, look right again, a new motorcycle safety campaign. So it's about T-junctions and I don't know, 18 million. And the message is simple, look right, look left, look right again. But anyway, that's it. And I think that should have been put out when it should have been put out in any case, but it's been put out there now. Okay, Councillor Marie Casserly, Independent from Sligo, thank you very much indeed. As I say, the fact that they launched it this morning, a complete coincidence, but... why wasn't it out last week? Okay, so the weather quite nice, actually. Any mist and fog should be clearing around about now to leave a sunny day with hazy spells at times, temperatures around 18 degrees. And what a week it would be to head to Buncrana Golf Club. I've got two reps from it. Liam Henderson, the current captain. Good morning to you, Liam. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Greg.
And your sidekick today, Pius McFadden, no stranger to Highland Radio, of course, and past captain at Buncrana Golf Club. What's it, 5, 6, 7 years now?
Yeah, 5 years.
Tell you, I keep a quiet track on you, boy.
I own me, Greg.
All right. Now, how's the course playing, Liam, at the moment? Tell us a bit about the course, actually, by the way.
It's a 9-hole course. It's one of the oldest 9-hole courses in the country, and got a greenkeeper, new greenkeeper last year, and the course never looked as well.
Yeah.
The greens, anybody comes from any of the courses they play, looks at the greens and they say second to none.
And people normally play 9 or ground twice. What's the story?
It's
a mixture.
In the evening, if a lot of people come after their work and they come in, they just play 9. So it's very handy. You go down an hour, 15 minutes, an hour and a half, you have the 9 holes done. But weekend, we all play 18 competitions every Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, exactly. The best of both worlds, Pius.
Best of both worlds. Yeah. Fantastic.
You can't beat... a good, concise 9 holes.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I hate when people go on courses and cut across holes. Does my planting. I don't know what you guys think. And I know it doesn't happen at your course, or maybe it does. But anyway, it's up to...
Very seldom it would happen at our course.
No. Four. Okay. Right, we're talking about the Drive It Home car draw. Who wants to pick this up? Do you want to tell us a bit about it, Liam?
Yeah, we're having a wee draw here. They're on for youth development. Basically, we have 70, 80 juvenile members. And we're running out of room for them. So we're doing a wee extension onto the locker room. We're building extra lockers. And we're going to put up a wee simulator for them. Because the young boys now, they're all into this golf simulator and all that. So we're just a bit of extra room, a wee bit more comfort for the fellas. Boys can come down and put their bags. Because a lot of the parents are saying the bags are coming out. The shoes are coming out. The backs of the cars are all covered in grass. So basically for that, it's all about the youth development coming up.
Yeah, which is actually also the future, because those youth players become the future captains down the line and what have you. And it's ambitious, Pius, because there's a new Hyundai i30 N line from Divers Hyundai up for grabs. That's a nice little prize, isn't it?
Beautiful car. Yeah. Beautiful car. Plus, we have 5, 3, 2, and 1,000 euro as well on top of that, you know. So anyone I am prizes, I would love to win it.
And the idea of this is that, you know, you don't really have to have an interest in Buncrana Golf Club or Buncrana for that matter. You might have an interest in draws, and this is a cracker, as I say. a prize pool in total of 43,500. There's lots up for grabs.
There's lots up for grabs, plus the tickets priced at €25 a ticket. We'll do 3 for 50, 7 for 100. We had to extend the draw because it wasn't going well, because when we started, we organised this the day we started the draw, the wire started.
Mm.
So everything started to go up and people were getting tight.
But it's also getting the message out too, Pius. You know, like, I hadn't heard about this, for an example, and I'm never off the, you know, so in other words, it sometimes it's about just giving an extra push, which is what we're doing today, right?
That's right.
Just a wee extra push to get a few tickets, extra tickets. So we're going to, the carriage draw will be done on Saturday evening, 8 o'clock. It'll be done on McCrannan Facebook Live. So hopefully now we just get that wee extra wee push and a few pound under the, as I say, it's for the youth development and that and for the club.
Right. Whoever's doing the Facebook draw, wear a tank top or something. I don't want to see any sleeves. I don't want to see someone pulling two tickets out. I don't, because nothing ever goes wrong, but do you ever see the draws and you go,
No sleeves.
Don't have your back to the camera. This is what I'm telling the guys here when we're doing draws. Yeah. The last push is on for tickets now, and who's to say the winning ticket may yet have to be sold, Liam?
Well, that is the very thing. The lady that won it, we would run this draw about 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And the lady won it, she was from Cairn, and she bought one ticket, I think, was it the morning of the draw or the day before the draw?
The day before the draw,
she just was looking online. And, she just
and that's the way
ticket.
It works by chance. Yep. It's an open draw. It could be the first ticket, it could be last or anything in between. And I think really too, these initiatives work well when you're doing two things. A, you're supporting a wonderful club in Buncrana that is trying to support and enhance the lives of the younger players, the boys and girls coming through. But also, you've a really good chance of winning some great prizes. Tickets are €25 for one, 3 for 50 and 7 for 100. And the prizes are a Hyundai i30 N-Line from Divers Hyundai. And the cash prize is, Pius?
Cash prize is 5,000, 3,000, 2,000 and 1,000.
And the draw's on Saturday, Liam?
On Saturday evening, the draw's on. We're having John McCarter and Father Baker will be there just to oversee everything. And we're going to have it on Saturday evening. And as I say, everything will be done online.
Okay, brilliant. And you can watch it online as well too. People love to be able to watch it too, don't they?
Online. And with a bit of luck, you could get the phone call. The mobile number is very important. And we give whoever wanted that night to get a wee ring.
Yeah.
We ring them on live.
We have some great youths down, as we say, like we're doing it for the youth development. There's some great youths, the club, they're brilliant.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, a few weeks back, we lost a great young youth. It was killed in a road traffic accident.
Oh.
Young Aaron Freel. And, you know,
it's tough, isn't it? It's a tough take indeed.
It's tough when you're down here.
He was a member of the club. He was a great little character.
Yeah.
Very funny type of fella, you know. That's the type of fella we have on the club. You know,
but you know, in naming him and remembering him and speaking so highly of him too, in a way, he's still in a way, but not the way we'd like, with us. And I'm sure the family will get some comfort from that. He's not forgotten, of course.
No.
Right, okay. Listen, thank you for that, Pius. Thank you, Liam. Where do people get their tickets?
The tickets, you can get them online or you can get them from a lot of the local shops in Buncrana.
Driveithomedraw.ie, a Hyundai i30 N-Line, beautiful car. £5,000, £3,000, £2,000, £1,000. And at the same time, you're supporting the club, its future, the young people. Very exciting. The draw live on Saturday night. Gents, thanks so much.
Thank you, Greg. Thanks very much.
We'll be back with you tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock.